I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. This was a good year for women in the movies. Think about Charlize Theron's portrayal of Furiosa in the high-octane dystopian Mad Max Fury Road, Alicia Vikander as Ava, the enigmatic robot in Ex Machina, Brie Larson as the fierce and protective Ma in the film Room, Kate Blanchett and Rumi Mara as lovers in Carol. There were movies this year based on real events, a newspaper investigation into the clergy abuse scandal in Boston, traders who figured out the financial crisis before Wall Street collapsed, and a doctor who first diagnosed brain damage in professional football players. Oh, and the latest Star Wars movie is breaking all box office records. Every time at this year on Radio Times, we look back on the year in movies, and 2015 has given us much to talk about. We asked our guests to pick some of their favorites, and we have plenty of clips queued up. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio, as he has done for the last 14 years to talk about movies, is Neil Oxman. He's a political consultant, co-founder of the Campaign Group here in Philadelphia, also a movie buff. He saw 177 movies in the movie theaters this year. Neil, nice to have you back with us on Radio
Time. Thanks, Marty. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Stephen Ray joins us. He's a movie critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. That's a position he's had since 1992. And Stephen Ray, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be here, Marty. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Let me begin with both of you, actually, and I'll start with you, Neil, but a sort of broad-based question. A good year for movies for you, 177?
I thought it was a very good year. I go through the movie diary that I keep, the list, and I had about 45 movies on it that I gave sort of solid B ratings that, you know, 25 of whom could have easily been on any top 10 list. And
That's a good year.
I thought it was a very nice year. For, I mean, I heard somebody say that, you know, there wasn't necessarily one great movie, but a lot of really, really good movies. And I sort of, although I have one movie that is my favorite of the year, I agree with that.
How about for you, Stephen?
Yeah, I agree with that. It was a strong year. I think it started off slow, but sometimes it tends to do that. Last year was Birdman, and for me that was like such a work of art that it sort of overshadowed every other film. And I think I said that it was the best film of the century. And so there can't be another film on that level for the next 85 years.
Exactly. So, well, Birdman was a breakthrough film in so many ways. But do you agree with Neil that there were just a lot of really good movies?
Yes, it was a very strong year, especially this last quarter.
Well, let's get the Star Wars thing out of the way. I saw it. I thought it was great.
Star Wars? What's that?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Did you like Star Wars?
Very much. I mean, I think J.J. Abrams has proved himself to be a master of the reboot and the remake. And Star Wars, The Force Awakens, is sort of half reboot, half remake, and just sort of captures the magic of the original Star Wars. You forget about the prequels that George Lucas did, the three prequels.
That were pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. And yeah, and introduce new stars. There's another woman who's sort of the hero of the film, Daisy Ridley, and who learns to use the lightsaber really fast. She's a quick study. and it's broken every record there is. It's going to be, you know, one of the top three moneymakers of all time.
How about for you, Neil?
Well, I loved it. I mean, it's nostalgia. And so it spans so many generations. The original came out in 1977, and for three generations of moviegoers, it is something that you look forward to. I mean, in the history of movies, if there are 20 or 30 iconic things, from Clark Gable saying to Vivian Leigh, you know, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." I mean, the opening of the Star Wars movie in 1977 with John Williams music.
Absolutely.
And the words going away diagonally into infinity. And when you saw that again, it literally gives you chills. And this movie, J.J. Abrams did exactly what he was supposed to do. He made that franchise what you remembered back in the 70s and early 80s.
Well, let's talk about the movies on your list. Neil, what's on your list for the good movies of 2015?
I started with a movie called 71. Stars Jack O'Connell, British film about a British soldier caught in Belfast during the Troubles. Takes essentially place in one night. It was terrific. Far From the Maddening Crowd, starring Carey Mulligan from the Tom Hardy novel. A wonderful movie called Dope, a comedy about three kids who are nerds in an inner city high school in L.A. and how they cope with that. And it's really funny. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, a wonderful coming of age movie filmed in Pittsburgh like Philadelphia has lost movies to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has every movie made. It should be a big newspaper article about that.
Well, you're sitting next to Stephen Ray there, but yes, so go ahead.
Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer comedy, which was great. Spotlight, the movie that you referred to about the Boston Globe Spotlight team investigating the clergy abuse. Sicario, a movie starring Emily Blunt and Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro. Benicio del Toro is never bad in a movie about the drug wars. The Martian, which is great because I thought science was the star of the movie. Trumbo, the story about the blacklist and Dalton Trumbo, and I'm a sucker for movies about movies, and this is, I think, a fun movie about movies with a great supporting cast. And my favorite movie of the year is The Big Short. Adam McKay, Philadelphia's Adam McKay, directs a movie about the financial crisis in 2007-08. You end up rooting for the bad guys with an unbelievable cast, well written. He explains it, and it's entertaining. It's my favorite movie of the year.
And we have some of those clips lined up. How about for you, Stephen Ray, on your list?
Well, I sort of cheated and went alphabetically this year. And
we have no rules here, just so you know.
Okay. And Anomalisa, which opened the Philadelphia Film Festival back in October and gets its theatrical release here next Friday, the first Friday in the new year. It's Charlie Kaufman who did Being John Malkovich and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And it's stop-motion animation. It's puppets. But it's a very – it's a serious comedy. There's definitely comedic elements and surreal elements. And David Thewlis is the voice of the main character and Jennifer Jason Leigh. And Tom Noonan does the voice of every other character in the film, man and woman. And it's just sort of a beautiful – study of people alone in their own world, and very moving and very strange to watch these puppets that are human-like, but at the same time, you're aware that they're puppets.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then Brooklyn, with Saoirse Ronan as an Irish immigrant coming to New York in the 1950s, based on the Colm Tobin novel. And I just found it spellbinding. It's sort of throwback to a woman's melodrama, perhaps, but it's so beautifully done, pitch perfect. And Saoirse Ronan's performance is just out of this world. At the beginning of the film, there's a close-up of her face, and the camera just stays on her face for almost a minute. And the expression in her eyes and just the soul that you see coming, it's amazing. She's certainly going to be nominated for Best Actress, and I think she might win, too. And then Carol, based on the Patricia Highsmith novel, romance between an older woman played by Cate Blanchett and a younger woman who's a shop girl played by Rooney Mara. It's funny, too, because both in Brooklyn and Carol, they're both set in early 50s New York, and both the characters are shop girls in department stores in Brooklyn and in Carol.
Little piece of history, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Clouds of Sils Maria, which is Juliette Binoche and Kristen Stewart, and directed by Olivia Assayas. And it's a film about the relationship between a woman who's an actress in mid-career, Juliette Binoche, and her personal assistant. And they're in a retreat in the Alps where the Juliette Binoche character is learning, is rehearsing for a play. And the Kristen Stewart character is reading back the lines of the other characters and the other character. And the play and their real life begin to mirror each other. And it's a film about memory and getting older. It's a beautiful film, just really moved me deeply. And then Creed, the Rocky handoff by Ryan Coogler, starring Michael B. Jordan as the son of Apollo Creed, who comes to Philadelphia to get Rocky Balboa to train him to fight. And I wasn't expecting much from this movie at all, and it just floored me. It's a great movie for Philadelphians. It celebrates the city, both the modern splendor of downtown Center City Philadelphia and also the gritty neighborhoods that are still there. And there's the first fight scene is one continuous take. It's amazing. It's an accomplished film. Cinematically, the acting, Michael B. Jordan is incredible. And I think Sylvester Stallone, it's a generous, moving, touching performance that I think he'll probably get a nomination for a supporting actor. And it's a wonderful handoff of this franchise to a new generation. Like Star Wars, like Mad Max, like Jurassic World, it's a film that taps into multiple generations of audiences who have this connection to this film, these films.
You know, Stephen, if you can just go through your list because we
– Oh, sure,
actually,
sure.
No,
sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. It's wonderful to hear
right.
these summarized only because we have
right,
many
we
of
have
them
clips,
up.
Right?
Yeah, but
the,
so we have –
Then
three,
Ex Machina, which Neil also mentioned, Alex Garland, Oscar Isaac, Domhnall Gleeson, Alicia Vikander, Inside Out, the Pixar film by Pete Docter, The Martian, Room with Brie Larson, and Jacob Tremblay, the little kid who's amazing.
Yes.
And Spotlight.
And Spotlight. And my list, which is, I couldn't figure out the order, and in many ways sounds like both of your lists, The Big Short, Room, Carol, The Martian, Mad Max, Spotlight, Sicario, Ex Machina, Creed, and I love Straight Outta Compton. I just thought that was just thoroughly entertaining and very well done. I wonder if we could actually set up our very first clip, and this is from Spotlight on all of our lists here. This is Liev Schreiber. He's Boston Globe editor Marty Baron, and he's telling the newsroom to think big as they take on an investigation into the priest abuse scandal involving the Boston Archdiocese. Let's give it a listen.
The numbers clearly indicate that there were senior clergy involved.
That's all they do. Indicate.
But are you telling me that if we run a story with 50 pedophile priests in Boston...
Mike, we'll get into the same catfight you got into on Porter, which made a lot of noise, but changed things not one bit. We need to focus on the institution, not the individual priests. Practice and policy. Show me the church manipulated the system so that these guys wouldn't have to face charges. Show me they put those same priests back into parishes time and time again. Show me this was systemic, that it came from the top down.
Sounds like we're going after law.
A scene from Spotlight, and that would be cardinal law, just so people understand that. Neil, this was on your list, and it had that, you know,
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
First of all, Liev Schreiber is so controlled and so, I mean, wonderful for words. Michael Keaton is great as he is in everything. John Slattery as Ben Bradley Jr. Rachel McAdams is one of the reporters on the team. I thought the movie wasn't overwritten. I thought it was just it a great note for what it was, and it was paced perfectly. I loved it.
And we're almost having a break here. Stephen, this was also on your list and mine as well. Mm-hmm.
I agree. It's an incredible ensemble performance. The cast is amazing. And it captures the newsroom culture perfectly, everything from the way people dress to the sort of the attitude in the newsroom. And it's a moving story. There's the scene, the walk and talk with Rachel McAdams and one of the abuse victims. It starts in a cafe and they go out into the park, and it's heartbreaking. But as Neil said, it's not overwritten. It's just perfectly calibrated.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about the year in movies. Our guests are Stephen Ray. He's movie critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Neil Oxman, we describe him as a movie buff. He's also a political consultant. And we have many more clips lined up, and we want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Stephen Ray and Neil Oxman about the movies of 2015 that we have enjoyed, and we are playing clips as well. And again, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Let me play a scene from another film, in fact, on all three of our lists and probably on a lot of other people's lists as well. This is The Martian, and it's a scene where astronaut Matt Damon is talking about his skills as a botanist that may help him survive on the planet Mars, and he's essentially speaking directly into the camera. Let's give it a listen.
Right. Let's do the math. Our service mission here was supposed to last 31 souls. For redundancy, they sent 68 souls worth of food. That's for six people. So for just me, that's going to last 300 souls, which I figure I can stretch to 400 if I ration. So I got to figure out a way to grow 3 years worth of food here on a planet where nothing grows. Luckily, I'm a botanist. Mars will come to fear my botany powers.
great scene. He leans into the camera. Stephen, this was on your list. Mm-hmm. And Matt Damon does, I think, such a terrific job.
I love Matt Damon in this film. And for at least half the film, it's just Matt Damon on Mars trying to figure out how to survive. And that's not an easy thing for an actor. There's no other actors to bounce off of. It's just him. And it's a wonderfully there's a moment – this is a little bit of a spoiler, but I feel like the book's a bestseller and so many people have seen the movie. So at the end, when he's getting into the ship to sort of to go back to meet regroup with his NASA team, there's a moment where he's on the communicating with them, and he breaks down. He starts to cry, and it's just such an emotional moment, and it surprises you because he's been so sort of together for the whole film. He's great. He's terrific in it.
How about for you, Neil?
I loved it. I mean, Matt Damon's one, I think, the few – because he's such a – people love him as a sympathetic star, as a person who could pull that off. There aren't that many people who can be on camera, Stephen said, that much in a fairly long movie and pull it off. I mean, it's sort of like this movie last year. There always has to be a Tom Hardy. I could have put three Tom Hardy.
He's another one that shows up a lot.
But he was in
this
on my list this year was a movie called Lock. Mm. I mean, you know, where he's literally just in a car and that's the entire time. But he's in, you know, Legend, a movie that was just off my list called Child 44, and then, of course, Mad Max, where he's great. But no, Damon's one of the few people who can pull this off.
Well, and it's nice to see Ridley Scott back in fine form because he's done some kind mm-hmm. of movies, don't you think, Stephen?
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's you know, he's – you look at Alien, look at Gladiator, Ridley Scott's a master.
Yes.
He's been a little bit off his game, but he's – I think he's captured it in The Martian.
It's a good film.
Mm-hmm.
A tweet from Daniel. He says, Ex Machina, top-notch in 2015. We actually had the director on the show a couple of months ago when he was in Philadelphia. His first film, right, Stephen?
His first film as director, Alex Garland. Yeah, he wrote the novel, The Beach, that was adapted, and he also wrote the screenplay for 28 Days Later. It's a very smart film. It's a chamber piece, really. It's just three characters. Oscar Isaac plays this billionaire.com guy who sort of invented a Google-like search engine, and he's an inventor. And Domhnall Gleeson is a techie that works for him. And Alicia Vikander plays this robot, this sentient robot. And it's a movie about artificial intelligence and where that's going. And it's scary and it's thrilling and...
And I'm mentally telepathizing with my engineer, Kevin, to set up Ex Machina. I told him we were going to do this all in order, and of course we're not. So let me play a scene from Ex Machina. This is a sci-fi, I think sort of horror flick in a certain kind of way. Alicia Vikander is Ava. She is questioning Caleb. He's played by Domhnall Gleeson, and he's a man who's been selected to test her for her human qualities. Let's give it a listen.
What will happen to me if I fail your test?
Ava.
Will it be bad?
I don't know.
Do you think I might be switched off because I don't function as well as I'm supposed to?
Ava, I don't know the answer to your question. It's not up to me.
Why is it up to anyone? Do you have people to test you or might switch you off?
No, I don't.
Then why do I?
I mean, such an interesting film. And I remember talking with the director, and I guess because I'm a radio person, I thought the sound design on that film was just incredible and just meticulous.
Yeah, I agree. And also, it's a beautiful film. It's shot mostly in Norway, I believe. Yeah, it's spectacular. It's also funny. It's interesting that both Domhnall Gleeson and Oscar Isaac are in this little film, Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
That's right. And another one of your girlfriends showing
up. She's become
a
breakout star with Testament of Youth and The Danish Girl. I mean, she's become somebody that people are really looking at.
Let's not forget The Man from U.N.C.L.E., too.
Yes.
Or let's forget The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Let me get looks like Mike from Mount Airy to join us on Radio Times. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. I know you guys both liked Spotlight, a great movie set in Boston. But what about another Boston movie, Black Mass, about the gangster Whitey Bulger? And I will hang up.
Okay, fair enough. Neil, did you like Black Mass?
Yeah. I mean, John, you know, the acting is amazing. I mean, having lived in Boston on and off, I knew the story. And I don't know if Johnny Depp's going to get nominated for Academy Award, but he could be. I mean, he's really, really, you know, very powerful in this movie.
Did you like it, Stephen?
Yes. And Johnny Depp really pulled off the performance, I thought. And there, people were beginning to wonder if Johnny Depp had lost it, the Lone Ranger, several other sort of turkey films that he was associated with. And he really comes back in this strongly.
Mordecai, which is
– Oh, yeah, Mordecai.
Which, where he actually, I think, does a Terry Thomas imitation the whole movie. It's an homage to Terry Thomas, which is so bad. I thought they had to have been making it as camp. It had to just be camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Couldn't be that bad.
And then Joel Edgerton, too, who's in Black Mass, I think is terrific.
Oh, interesting.
It's a strong film. It's a little – sort of Scorsese, well, not a little Scorsese-like. It's a lot Scorsese-like.
And that's not a bad thing.
But that's not a bad thing.
For a story like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me play a scene from Room. Stephen, this is a movie that you and I put on our list, and I will just confess right here, I cried through the – first of all, I love the novel upon which it was based, and I basically cried through the entire film. Probably cry when I hear this clip. And this is actress Brie Larson. She is Ma. She's explaining to her son Jack, who's played by Jacob Tremblay, how they came to live in Room. They are essentially prisoners of this guy who captured her and then impregnated her, a guy named Old Nick. Let's give it a listen.
Do you remember how Alice wasn't always in Wonderland?
She fell down, 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 deep in a hole.
Right, well, I wasn't always in Room. I'm like Alice. I was a little girl named Joy.
Nah.
And I lived in a house with my mom and my dad. You would call them Grandma and Grandpa.
What house?
A house. It was in the world. And there was a backyard, and we had a hammock. And we would swing in the hammock, and we would eat ice cream.
A TV house?
No, Jack, a real house, not TV. Are you even listening to me? When I was a little older, when I was 17, I was walking home from school.
Where was I?
You were still up in heaven. But there was a guy. He pretended that his dog was
what
sick.
What guy?
Old Nick. We call him Old Nick. I don't know what his real name is. But he pretended his dog was sick.
What's the dog's name?
Jack, there wasn't a dog. He was trying to trick me. Okay? There wasn't a dog. Old Nick stole me.
I want a different story.
No, this is the story that you get.
Mm, so powerful. Mm. I mean, just and the two performances there. That little boy, I mean, there wasn't a sort of a false or sentimental moment in this whole film.
No, just hearing Jacob Tremblay's voice again makes me sort of tingle inside.
Yeah.
It's amazing. He plays a five-year-old in the film, and I believe he was only 8 or 9 when they shot the film last year in Toronto. And he's incredible. Yeah. There's every now and then there's a child actor who comes along who's so natural and has such an innate gift, and it can go into that pretend world without any of the baggage that an adult actor has. And,
yeah.
And this is an extraordinary performance.
I mean, on every list you've seen, Alison Brie has been listed as being nominated for a Best Actress. I mean, here he is. She does two movies this year that I can remember. Trainwreck, where she plays Amy Schumer's sister, and it's hysterical. And then she does this in Room. And I hope she does get nominated because it is one of the two or three strongest female performances this year by a mile.
Mm-hmm. Again, Brie Larson in the film Room, and we are playing selections of movies that, frankly, we have enjoyed this year and talking with our guest, Stephen Ray. He's movie critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Also, Neil Oxman goes to the movies a lot. He saw 177 of them this year. I'm so jealous. He's also a political.
Well, I have no life. You have a life. I always tell you that.
I know, but somehow, you know, spending all those hours in movie theater seems like a wonderful thing. Neil's also a political consulting co-founder of the Campaign Group here in Philadelphia. And you can join the conversation and tell us about some of the movies that you enjoyed this year. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Let me play The Big Short. Now, Neil, this was on your list.
My favorite movie of the year.
Your favorite movie of the year. Let's play a clip and then we can talk about it. And this is a movie about the risky behavior by banks, by Wall Street firms that led up to the financial crisis and the recession that we all remember. This is a scene where Ryan Gosling, who plays this trader, Jared Vanette from Deutsche Bank, and he's giving a pitch at a meeting to bet against these subprime mortgages. He's speaking to a group that's headed up by a guy named Mark Baum, played by Steve Carell.
You're saying that at 8% the bonds fail and we are already at 4%?
That's right.
If they go to 8, it's Armageddon.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're offering us a chance to short this pile of blocks. How?
With something called a credit default swap. It's like insurance on the bond, and if it goes bust, you can make 10 to 1, even 20 to 1 return, and it's already slowly going bust.
10 to 1, 20 to 1, no way.
And no one's paying attention. No one is paying attention because the banks are too busy getting paid obscene fees to sell these bonds.
But wait, you are the bank. When you work for the bank, I bet your margins are pretty nice and fat.
Let's not talk about my margins, by the way. Being nice and fat, that's a nice shirt. Do they make it for men?
Aren't you the bank?
I work for the bank. I don't think like a bank. Big bank, small bank, I like to make money. All right? Let me put it this way. I'm standing in front of a burning house, and I'm offering you fire insurance on it.
Why did you like that movie? Why was that your number one movie?
Well, you know, it's funny. There's two... Michael Lewis's book of this and Moneyball have been the movies that have made from these books about real people. I mean, it have been great. You would think, geez, is this going to be some over the top movie like Wall Street with Michael Douglas and just sort of craziness? This was a really intelligent movie, and you're rooting for the bad guys. I mean, you hate everybody on Wall Street like Americans do. It should all be broken up. It is a racket. He explains it so wonderfully with. I don't want to do spoilers, but how it's done in the movie. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's really funny, and it's well acted. And go see this movie. Movie over the holidays besides Star Wars, this is a movie that you would really want to see for anybody. You'll really like it.
And you might actually understand what a credit default swap is or a collateralized debt obligation is.
Or a bespoke tranche option.
Exactly. This did not make your top 10 list.
No, it didn't make my top 10 list, but it's a very impressive film. And it's another instance of a great ensemble cast. I mean, it's Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Brad Pitt, Christian Bale, who's phenomenal in it, and learned to play the drums in 3 weeks apparently for that.
Oh, interesting.
He plays a trader investor who's sort of walks around his office with barefoot with his shirt hanging out, and he sits at the drum kit and like rocks out these heavy metal tunes. It's a very impressive film. I think Adam McKay is a really smart filmmaker. And, you know, if you're going to think, Anchorman dude.
Talladega Nights.
How can he pull off an adaptation of a Michael Lewis book? He pulls it off brilliantly.
Well, it's both. It is a comedy in many ways. But I was so angry when I left the movie theater for all the obvious reasons.
That's why I think it's good to see it. You know, because you realize that what these guys are doing up there.
Yeah, it could all happen again. It's like it's interesting too. There was another film this year, 99 Homes, that sort of is the ground level, the same story but told ground level with people getting their houses foreclosed and down in Florida
with Michael Shannon, mm-hmm.
who's a great actor.
Yes, from Boardwalk Empire.
Mm-hmm. Now this is for you, Neil. You mentioned Amy Schumer and her film Trainwreck was on your top 10 list. Here's a scene where she's playing Amy, and she's telling the Brie Larson character that she thinks her love interest, and this is a guy played by Bill Hader, just might be too nice for her. Let's give this a listen.
Just breathe. It's fine.
Who wants to have kids?
Amy?
Like right now.
People talk about that.
Not really.
It's fine.
I don't know anyone that talks about that.
He's great. It's normal. I think Aaron's great. I really like him.
Can you tell the members of Heaven's Gate in there to relax? No, he's too nice.
He's not too nice.
Yes, he is. He's too nice for me. You know it.
No, he's the perfect amount of nice that you deserve.
Yeah, but you know what? There's deal breakers across the board with him. Like, the sex is good. It's, like, really good. Like, it's great, but it's not, like, the best I've ever had, you know?
Yeah, right. You don't want best sex that you've ever had, guy.
No, you want to stay with the best you've ever had, guy.
No, you don't. That's a creepy guy. You don't want to be with that guy. Best sex that you've ever had, guy, is in jail. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I've been thinking about maybe reaching out to him.
She is so funny.
She's great. I mean, Bill Hader is wonderful in it. LeBron James is perfect. Here's an athlete who's making a movie. It's not one of these squirmy athlete roles that you see where you go, oh, geez. He is really, really funny. There's a scene in which he leaves his sunglasses in Bill Hader's office, who plays his doctor, and he comes back for a $30 pair of glasses. He says, I'm not giving, Sunglass Hut any more money. It's LeBron James is making $60 million a year. She's a good writer. Besides being, a hysterical comedian, she's a really good writer.
It surprised me just sort of how traditional the movie was, though. In many ways, it was about a girl who falls in love with a guy, and you know,
yeah, it's all a rom com, but in Amy Schumer's right. own particular way. Right. Yeah. LeBron James steals every scene he's in. Practically,
absolutely.
There's another great scene where he comes in and talks about Downton Abbey. He's like.
Let me just read a tweet here. I'll put this to you, Stephen. This is from Joyce, interested in hearing your thoughts on Carol, Kate, and Rooney's performances. And Carol was on my list. It was also on your list as well.
Rooney Mara plays this sort of young, unformed woman in New York and trying to figure out what she wants in life. And she meets the Cate Blanchett character in the department store where Cate Blanchett's – she's an older woman, wealthy. She's come to buy a toy for her daughter for Christmas. And you can see it's – there's something that happens electrically between them as they lock eyes in the department store – toy department. And both performances are just so beautifully pitched, and the chemistry between the two of them. Cate Blanchett is, we know, she's an amazing actor. I mean, she's done so many Blue Jasmine most recently, and also in Cinderella, another woman's film from this year. And Rooney Mara, she was in the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. She's been exceptionally, you can see there's a real talent there and a real thoughtfulness. And the two of them together, you just feel, this, it's a love story, and you just feel that, and you feel the heartache there and the obsession.
I thought Rooney Mara was terrific mm-hmm. in this. I mean, in certain ways, I found her almost more interesting than the Cate Blanchett character mm-hmm. just because it seemed like a new kind of fresh face and
performance. Yeah, and it's her story. It's from her point of view.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking about the movies of 2015 with Stephen Ray and with Neil Oxman. We've got some callers here at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about the movies of 2015. There were a lot of really good ones. Stephen Ray is movie critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's got a new book coming out in January called Hollywood Cafe, Coffee with the Stars. Neil Oxman is with us as well. He's a political consultant, co-founder of the Campaign Group here in Philadelphia, and he's also a movie buff. He saw 177 movies in the theater this year. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Connie from Doylestown to join us. Connie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. My grandchildren never saw the original Star Wars movie. Their twins are 10 and the granddaughter is 9. Should they see the original Star Wars before they go to the new movie?
And how old are your – oh, they're 10 years old?
10 and 9.
10 and 9. 10 and 9. So should they see all the Star Wars movies, Stephen Ray?
I think you can go to this one, The Force Awakens, without having seen the original Star Wars because it, in many ways it's just a remake of the original. But I guess for context and a sense of history of the franchise, you might want to have them sit down and watch the first three and then come see The Force Awakens.
What do you think, Neil?
I mean, if you really want to be a traditionalist, you should go see – you don't have to. I mean, you don't have to do it in terms of understanding them. It would be fun for them to do. I don't know they'll get it. I think you should just go and let them see the movie without seeing the first three. And if they really love it as much as I think they will, then you can show
they'll
them the first
three.
Yeah, and go back and, mm-hmm. and see the original. Connie, thanks for the call. Let me see what Ryan from Lansdowne has to say. Ryan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, hi, thank you.
Sure.
I was just wondering what you guys think about, because I've heard you mention Mad Max a lot on the program today. I loved it. My best friend, he saw it 5 times.
Wow.
But I've really been, I was there for one of those. He was, but, you know, he loves it so much. I kind of can't help but think it is a great movie, and there's some great acting in it and some amazing storytelling and characters. But I kind of wondered, would it be as popular as it would be if we didn't expect remakes to kind of be bad? I mean, at least in my friend group, we always see a remake is coming out. We kind of roll our eyes.
And this one, obviously, I mean, I have to say, I put this on my top 10 list because mm-hmm. I just could not believe what I was seeing. Stephen?
I just came back from California visiting my parents for the holidays, and I was on a plane Sunday night, and the gentleman across the aisle was watching Mad Max Fury Road on his computer, and I kept looking over without sound, and I was just floored by the nonstop, relentless energy of the film and the visual madness of it. It's like a Hieronymus Bosch painting of hell, but in motion, and with these kind of fleshy, freakish people. And it's also you were talking at the beginning of the show about how this has been a great year for women in film. It's a feminist action picture.
It is,
and Charlize Theron is really the star of the film, not Tom Hardy. And I think part of the reason it succeeds as a sequel is that it's the same director, George Miller, and he had more to say and more to do. And it's remarkable, the energy of the film, the visual craziness of it.
No CGI. The stunts of it. That's what I think was amazing with all the cars. The sort of seesaw type things.
Yes.
No CGI. Those guys are doing that. Explain that to me.
Well, and how someone didn't get either hurt or even killed. That's phenomenal.
And Tom Hardy is just, I see him do that. I see him do these. Anybody who goes and sees Legend, I dare them to believe it's the same guy, you know, in these dual roles as the Cray brothers. And then he plays a Russian detective at the height of the Stalin era investigating a serial killer in Child 44. This guy is remarkable. He really is.
Yeah. It's a cliche to say chameleon-like, but he really is. Yeah.
He's a good one.
But I do have one. I would ask Tom Hardy would never do another role where he has a mask on his face. I'm getting it. It's like The Dark Knight and Mad Max. Come on.
Let's see the face. Ryan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me go back to our films here that we have all lined up. This is a scene from Brooklyn, and I believe, Stephen, Brooklyn was on your list.
Yes, definitely.
On your list. And this is Emery Cohen. He's playing a guy named Tony. He's Italian, and he is very smitten with this young Irish woman named Eilis Lacy, played by, how do you say her first name?
Saoirse, I believe.
Saoirse Ronan. And they're on a trolley or a bus or something together, and let's listen to their conversation.
I want to ask you something, and you're going to say, oh, it's too soon. I don't really know him well enough. We only been out a couple times. Oh, it's nothing so bad. It's just it's something that most guys did.
Please just ask. You're beginning to terrify me.
Oh. Sure. Will you come for dinner and meet my family sometime?
That's it. I'd love to.
You like Italian food?
Don't know. I've never eaten it.
It's the best food in the world.
Well, why would I not like it?
You're in a good mood, huh?
Yes. Why?
Just I like how you're being. I don't know the word, when you go along with everything.
Amenable.
Yeah? Amenable? Okay.
Such a sweet scene.
Mm-hmm. That accent, it's just music, the right. Irish accent. I already sort of did my spiel about Saoirse Ronan and how amazing she is in this film. But everyone is, too. Emery Cohen is the Italian-American she meets in Brooklyn and falls headlong in love with her. And then Domhnall Gleeson, Ex Machina and Star Wars, is the other life she could have had, the young man back in Ireland when she leaves Brooklyn to go home when there's a family tragedy. Yeah. It's a beautiful film.
And it's interesting to see a film, Neil, about immigrants in this time of political
but they're European immigrants who are Catholic, so it's there are some distinctions that people in this country make, unfortunately. Actually, the dinner scene they were talking about in the movie is hysterical.
I
mean, it's really funny.
Yes.
But it's, you know, I, with the exception, I think, of two or three movies, I could have done a whole nother top 10 list, would have been exactly the same except for two or three. In the sense, it was that interchangeable. Brooklyn would have been on it as well.
Mm. Let me get Cletus from Bensalem to join us. Then we'll listen to a section from Creed. Cletus, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks, Marty, as always.
Sure. I'm a dedicated cineast. I see one film a week, if not two. I'm actually an expert in the featured part, so I'm very dedicated. I wonder,
you know, I hate to do this to you only because your phone is going in and out. But I'm seeing on the screen what you want to ask. So, Cletus, I'm going to ask it for you. This is the film called Youth, and it has, I guess it stars Michael Caine. Did you see that, Neil?
Yes, I just saw it just a few days ago. It's an Italian film. Michael Caine plays a retired movie conductor. Rachel Weisz is in it as his daughter. Harvey Keitel and Jane Fonda. It's really a nice movie. I mean, it's very slow, but I think Michael Caine is as good as he's ever been, and he's a great actor. And it's fun and it's worth seeing.
Sounds like you agree.
Yes, it's Paolo Sorrentino who did The Great Beauty and won the foreign language Oscar, and it's visually stunning, and it reminded me a lot of Clouds of Sils Maria. Because also it's set in a retreat in the Swiss Alps in this luxurious spa, but it's another film, a meditation on growing old and on friendship and memory. Michael Caine, Neil is right, is just incredible in this film.
Great.
He's a conductor and composer, and there's a scene where he goes for a walk in the fields, and there's a cows with bells on around their neck, and he just sits down and starts conducting the cows, and it's this magical, beautiful scene.
Sounds lovely. Yeah. Sounds lovely. Let me play a scene from Creed, and this is Sylvester Stallone. He's playing an aging Rocky Balboa talking to Adonis Creed, played by Michael B. Jordan, about his high expectations for the fighter. Adonis Creed is the son of Apollo Creed and, of course, Rocky's rival in the ring. Let's give it a listen. This, of course, filmed here in Philadelphia.
No, I don't even know what I'm doing here because I got other plans in my life and this wasn't part of it. Your father was special. Taking the truth, I don't know if he's special. Only you're going to know that when the time is right. And it ain't going to come overnight. You're going to take a beat, you're going to take this, you're going to get knocked out, you're going to get up, and you're going to see if you got the right thing. But you got to work hard. I swear to God, if you're not going to do it, I'm out.
Fuck, every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. I'm ready.
A scene from Creed, Michael B. Jordan and Sylvester Stallone and Steven. I mean, they're just terrific together.
They are. I love the way Adonis calls him Uncle.
Yeah.
There's a training. All the Rocky films have training montages in it, and the training montage in Creed, as Adonis is preparing to fight the big fight at the end of the film, is just one of the most amazing pieces of cinema. He's running down Front Street in Kensington, and there are these kids on dirt bikes and motorbikes doing wheelies. And the old familiar refrains of the Bill Conti Rocky theme come up mixed with hip-hop, right. And then it suddenly goes slow-mo. Your heart just stops and then beats incredibly fast at the same time. It's just great cinema. Michael B. Jordan is amazing in this film. Ryan Coogler proves that he can make a big Hollywood movie. He made Fruitvale Station with Michael B. Jordan,
movie.
Which is a terrific film.
Yeah.
But this is something else altogether.
And I thought the fight sequences, too. I mean, the actual fights were
– The choreography.
Was phenomenal. I mean, I felt like there was really
Steven said something
going on.
Earlier about Sylvester Stallone. I think that one of the two best supporting actor performances here were Stallone and then Mark Rylance in Bridge of Spies as the Russian spy in Bridge of Spies. And I hope he's nominated because he's so understated and so giving and so unlike, you know, these sort of the over-the-top stuff. I mean, he's actually gotten better as a real actor as he's gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was great. And it is a great Philadelphia movie.
I got a lot of tweets here. A tweet from Maria. Agree with many of your picks. Why no Bridge of Spies or Diary of a Teenage Girl? I think we can all agree those are really interesting,
yes,
good movies.
Yes.
I want to highly recommend Trumbo, Story of Blacklisting. That was on your list, Neil. They also liked the movie Inside Out, which you liked, Stephen. And I'm doing this only because I do want to at least get one more clip on.
Mm-hmm.
And this moves us into the documentary category. And let me play the clip from the Amy Winehouse documentary called Amy. And here she's we sort of pick it up in the middle of this recording session. She's recording Back to Black in the studio with Mark Ronson. This is during a recording session. She's maybe the healthiest that she has been, as we see her in this very small clip. But let's give it a listen.
It was just one of those serendipitous things. Like, I just caught her at that magic moment, you know, and she was just ready to get it going. That's why I couldn't understand what everyone else was saying about this procrastinating, troubled artist.
And again, that's Mark Ronson talking about Amy Winehouse.
It is a bit upsetting at the end.
It is.
But one of the things the film does is they, as she's singing all through the film, Amy Winehouse, they put the lyrics up on screen, and you realize that not only does she have a remarkable voice and is an incredible song interpreter, but she's a great songwriter. Yeah. The lyrics really are poetry.
We are almost out of time, but one we can't do justice to this, but I know, Neil, you liked Listen to Me, Marlon, another documentary.
Right.
This is
I thought
Marlon
there were
Brando.
Some really, really good documentaries out. Amy, Listen to Me, Marlon, Best of Enemies about the Gore Vidal, William mm-hmm. Buckley debates, mm-hmm. The Steve Jobs, Alex Gibney thing. If you care about Saturday Night Live, go see a documentary called Drunk, Stone, Brilliant, Dead, The Story of the National Lampoon, because you realize that everybody who ever wrote or acted in the National Lampoon ended up working for Saturday Night Live. But Listen to Me, Marlon is really an interesting movie because they found old tapes of Marlon Brando. And they essentially play his tapes, and it's really well done.
Yeah, and you can see how thoughtful he is about acting. I want to save just 40 seconds for the worst movie of the year to you, Stephen Ray.
I would say Ricky and the Flash
okay,
is probably the worst. The Meryl Streep trying to be like a hard drinking rock and roll mama. It's just painful from beginning to end.
So avoid that one. How about for you, Neil?
For me, because it's personal, our brand is Crisis, the movie produced by George Clooney and stars Sandra Bullock about political consultants going to South America. It's so trite and so trivial. And I mean, you know, any one of 40 political consultants could have written it in a half hour, you know, it's sitting at lunch. It's so bad.
Well, on that note, thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
You're very welcome.
Thanks very much.
It was fun to have the two of you together. Neil Oxman is a political consultant, co-founder of the Campaign Group here in Philadelphia. He's loves the movies, saw 177 of them this year. I think he's not done quite yet. Stephen Ray, movie critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he's got a new book coming out in January called Hollywood Cafe, Coffee with the Stars. And we appreciate all your comments and calls to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the program, how to download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.